Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Toast to the Arts Show, where we celebrate books, music, visual, and the performing arts. Welcome, everybody. Today, we're very excited to welcome Anne-Marie Jameson on the show. We first met Anne-Marie back in Natchitoches, Louisiana this past fall. We were there to film and actually finally get to experience their amazing Christmas light celebration that they do every year in Natchitoches. I mean, they're almost 100 years of this festival of lights. And that's where we got to meet Anne. And Anne is a writer. She writes women's fiction. And gosh, she's got a series out. So she's got, I think it's four books, or she's got one called
Five.
Lilies of Redemption. How many do you have? Five.
Five.
Five. Well, first off, welcome, Anne-Marie. How are you?
I'm fine. Nice to be here with all of your audience.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. And, you know, it was great that you were there at the Christmas Festival of Lights. And so five books. That's right. I was like, keeping up. You've been going. You've been busy. But I heard like this year you're kind of taking a little writing hiatus so that you can do so much work with this writers group that you're part of too, right?
Yes, I just got elected as president of my local writers group, and so I'm trying to kind of use some of my energy and expertise that I've developed over the last 7 years being in the group, because they were so instrumental in helping me succeed, that I'm trying to like give back.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I know that you're on our Toast to the Arts podcast, which celebrates everyone in the arts, books, writing, art, music, you name it, but also our Women Making History podcast. And so what I wanted to ask you as a writer, and you definitely write about women, do you feel community helps you grow as a writer?
Do I feel the community helped me grow?
Yeah, as being part of like an organization, like your writers group.
Oh, yes, definitely. When I joined the group, I had just written my first novel, and I had not even published it yet, and didn't even know that I was going to become a published author. I just wrote the story kind of as a fluke. It was a family experiment, so to speak, a challenge. And didn't know what to do with it after I wrote it. And then I found out about this writer's group and joined it. And they kind of encouraged me and helped me along the way to get it out there and then to keep going. So, yes. And they're mostly women, but there are a handful of men in the group.
Well, that's good. And everyone, it's called the Creative Minds Writers Group.
Yes.
And this is, now, if I don't pronounce this right, you know I need to come back to Louisiana. It's the only way to get it. Ponchatoula?
Ponchatoula.
Ponchatoula. So that's outside Hammond or within Hammond?
Yes. We're kind of sister cities, Ponchatoula and Hammond.
So near Baton Rouge.
We're right next door to each other, and we're about 45 minutes from Baton Rouge.
Okay, so outside the big bustling capital city of Louisiana. So,
right.
You know, we love Louisiana.
We're to the east of it.
Okay, yeah, we've been through there. I know we have. We've been through Hammond. We've been through, because we travel across the state of Louisiana a lot. And if we get any chance to stop in Natchitoches, even if it's for 5 seconds, we're doing it. We're going to get a meat pie. You know, we have to have a meat pie. You have a wonderful state that you can get really
good. Yes, we're all about food. That's why my first two books, I have recipes in them, because the characters are that they talk about food constantly, and they're always cooking.
So the one, I started reading your first book, Bed of Roses, right?
A Bed of Roses. Yes, that's
that
the first
That was the
one.
First one. And so that became your Willow series.
Yes. And it's like I said, when I wrote at the time, there was not really a series in mind. Although I had all kind of stories in my head when I wrote it, you know, I thought, well, I could, you know, go on. I could write 100 stories in the same direction, because it was based on my family. So I had all the experiences that I had gone through life with my family. And so I could think of, you know, numerous things to write about. But I didn't have the idea that I was actually going to act on that or do that, you know.
Oh, but see, I think that's serendipity, right? I know that you were a special educations teacher, right?
Yes. And I would have been a special education student if I had if they'd had special ed when I went to school, but because I'm actually hearing impaired and visually impaired, but very mildly, but I am. And I became a special ed teacher quite by accident. Most everything that happened in my life was by accident, but I actually graduated in social welfare. Was going to be a social worker, and but I couldn't get a job with only a 4-year degree. I needed a master's, and I got married, had kids, and didn't have the ability to go back to school to get a master's. And they needed special ed teachers. They had a shortage of special ed teachers, and I needed a job I could work around my kids' school schedules. And they said, "Oh, come be a special ed teacher, and we'll pay for your education, get your master's degree, and you can get your master's degree in education, special education specifically." Because I wanted to get a master's degree in history. I thought I'd be a good history teacher. But they were like, no, we need special ed teachers. We don't need history teachers. So we're only giving scholarships for special ed teachers." So that's how ended up being a special ed teacher.
Did you enjoy it?
Yes, some of it I really enjoyed. Working with the kids, was very rewarding. Making a difference in their lives. I especially like to work with autistic children. That was my niche. But the bureaucracy of education was very stressful,
Yeah,
and
it
very,
still is.
and that was probably the thing that made me get out more than anything.
Well, now as a writer, because of your connection with the youth that you taught, and you're saying that, connection, especially with autistic children, do you feel that that helped you in crafting stories and your writing as an author, be able to get your point across, not be over flower. Yeah, you can't be too flowery, right? You have to get to the point, but still have that warm connection, be a storyteller. And storytelling, I think, is one of the greatest tools of education, is to be able to tell a story. People remember stories, connect with stories, can see themselves within a story more than here's the facts, get the facts in your head. So do you think being an educator helped you as a writer?
That's a good question, because I never really thought about it in that way. But I'm sure it probably played some part, because I taught school for 22 years, so it did, probably have a good effect on how my personality and how my writing skills developed. When, in fact, when I first started writing, now that you mention it, my first book was a children's book years and years ago. And because I wrote children's stories, and I wrote the stories for my students, and then I put it away. I didn't write anymore for several years, and then that's when I wrote the novel quite by accident, and so I guess that did have a factor in it.
Wow. Well, 22 years in education is a that's a good long that's a long haul. That's a lot of educating,
Yes, it was.
And then when you talk about the bureaucracy, I think the education system, they need help. There's a
Yes,
lot of help that's
and I was
needed.
glad I got out when I did, because from what I can understand from friends that I still have in the teacher industry, that it just got considerably worse after I left.
Especially during COVID was also very bad, very hard on teachers.
Yes,
I think
yes.
they're underrated. So thank you for your service as a teacher, especially in special needs, because I think they're right. Special needs teachers are on in demand. I think,
Yes,
it
there are.
takes.
When I was in it, there's one thing I could always say is I'm guaranteed a job, because they're so short of special ed teachers. But they would put me in the worst class. They kind of set me up to be burned out, because they would put me in the worst situations, because they couldn't get other teachers to t teach those stu type of students. And so I never could work my way out of those situations and into a better situation because they're like, well, we know you can do this, you know? And that I would connect to the students in that
But that's
regard, you
good
know,
though,
so.
too. That's also good. That's nice for them, right? The students,
Yeah. Or
but you obviously had patience.
obviously had what?
Patience,
Oh,
good patience.
actually, I was not a very patient person, and it taught me a lot about patience. It did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
Wow.
I think I became more patient because of my experiences as a teacher.
Oh, wow. So your Willow series is set in Natchitoches, Louisiana, the oldest settlement in the state of Louisiana. What led
Yes.
you to write, and that's where we met you, right outside the Visitor Bureau, where our friends Arlene and Nicole and Stacy. Tell us a little bit about why Natchitoches for you. I mean, I could go on, and we have a show that we do every third Tuesday. We do a podcast covering what to experience in Natchitoches, but like I could just stay all day and just talk about that.
Yes, it's such
I
a
love it. It
quaint,
doesn't feel, it's not
charming
a city.
town.
I know it's not a city, is it? But it is the oldest city, but it doesn't feel like a city.
Well, the reason your question is why did I pick Natchitoches? Well, because my story is largely my books are largely set around my family. I write them fi as fictional, but they're based on things that happened in my family. And they go back in time. They start in present time, but they do talk a lot about their ancestors, what happened because it centers around their family land and how the land's been in the family for generations. And so they talk about how their family came from France and settled in the Natchitoches area in the 1800s, et cetera. And that's what my family did. My family came to Natchitoches in the 1800s. Actually, I think they came in the 1700s, but for the book's sake, I said 1800s. And they settled in Natchitoches, and they bought a big plot of land that was basically a plantation, and they developed that land. So that's what I centered my book on. And my parents actually settled in northern, farther north of Louisiana. But I wanted to base the story on Natchitoches because of their roots in Natchitoches.
Wow. So your other family, were they more Monroe area or Winfield or where north?
I grew up in Monroe, but my mother's family, this is based largely on my mother's side of the family. And my mother's side of the family had moved. My grandparents were born in Natchitoches. They were raised in Natchitoches. Well, Natchitoches Parish. They weren't born in the city of Natchitoches, you know, outskirts of Natchitoches. And they were born there, but when they got married, they moved north and eventually settled in Bastrop, Louisiana. My mother was raised in Bastrop. I was raised in Monroe. And then my parents retired to Ruston. So we had you know, lives in all those areas. And I was actually born in New Orleans because my dad was working on a job in New Orleans at the time, but they were just there briefly when I just happened to be born in New Orleans. So and then when I as an adult, my husband got a job in the New Orleans area, so I ended up in New Orleans again. So I've been all over Louisiana,
It's that I love
between
it.
my family and myself.
I love Louisiana. I always say it's like its own country. I know they say that about Texas, but
Yes.
Louisiana has this, I don't know, the culture, the roots, and maybe it is the food. Tell us about some of these recipes in your books. Like, are these family recipes that you've had passed
Yes,
down?
most of them are. My family was always big into cooking. My parents had a catering company for several years. Mostly there there we had good cooks on my dad's side of the family and my mother's side of the family, and both my mother and father cooked. It was I don't know which one I could say was a better cook because they both cooked. It just food's always been our lives.
Now, okay, so were meat pies ever part of that mix?
Actually, not that I am familiar with. I was not familiar with meat pies till I went to Natchitoches to do my research. Mostly they cooked things like gumbos and jambalayas, and just meat and potato types. I mean, meat and rice type, roast and rice and gravy and red beans and rice and that kind of food.
Hearty food,
Food
and then
that would stretch a long ways.
sure, right? You need that, to
We
fill your
were a big
belly.
family, so and money
Oh,
was tight, so we had to make
sure.
food that would stretch.
Yeah, no, so you go to Natchitoches to do the research. Did you go to any of the there's these I was going to think two genealogical libraries that we three actually when I think about it, because the Creole Heritage Center has got a lot of information too, but there's a li there's two libraries that we've been to that keep a lot of genealogy records. Did you go to any of those, or were you just trying to get sense of place?
I went to the main library. I forgot what area
In the
it's
U
not.
it's downtown, but it's like right next.
Yeah,
It's
that's
part of
it.
Northwest, I think, and that's where they have Cami Henry's those big scrapbooks of Cami Henry. Have you seen these? Cami Henry, the writer?
I don't recall that name or that I didn't do as much research there as I did the one on the campus, Southwestern,
Oh,
I mean
okay.
South,
Northwestern University. Yeah.
yes.
And
And
it's
I did more research there, but I went
okay.
to both those libraries. Mostly, while I did do research for that reason, most of my information came from a family. My family, or my mother's original family name was Dubois, or du, we always just pronounced it W, but it's spelled DeBlieux. And they did, one of my cousins did an extensive bio,
Okay, family tree thing, like,
family
yeah.
gener genealogy series. And it's actually in her book is in the library there.
Oh,
And
wow.
she had done one, I don't know, over 20 years ago, and that's the one that I used. But she just recently came out with a new revised version, about a year ago, I guess. And it's very, very detailed information about, the area, our genealogy, and all that, how our family was during that time. So I used some of that too, for my
Okay, cool.
research, a lot of that, and just family knowledge about, what ha happened and things like that. And I went and talked to a lot of the people in Natchitoches. I stayed at a bed and breakfast there. I had already decided my main character was going to have a bed and breakfast before I even picked the setting. And I knew that Natchitoches was known for its bed and breakfasts. So I thought that would be a good setting for a character that was going to have a bed and breakfast. And so it just all kind of came together that way. In some ways, I kind of was disappointed I picked Natchitoches, because a lot of people have who don't know about Natchitoches, they can't really relate to a town called Natchitoches. I should have picked something that I should have given it a more fictional name and named it something like Rose Hill, or
No,
something like that.
I think
But
it needs all the help it can get. I mean, we say it's Natchitoches, like Mickey Mouse. Kelly from who used to be at the Visitor Bureau there, and she moved to Oklahoma. She taught us how to do it like Mickey Mouse,
Oh, really?
Natchitoches.
That's
But
a
we
good
find it
thing.
like people are get confused between Natchitoches, Louisiana, and Nacogdoches, Texas.
Yeah.
But
So
to
I've
us,
had
I mean,
trouble with that with the book.
But it's a conversation piece, and it's something, I think it's a great service what you're doing in that, because you're sharing, this historic place. And it's, a lot of times when people travel, they think, Louisiana, New Orleans is all of it,
Yeah.
It's like they think Louisiana, the state, is New Orleans, and there's so much to the state of Louisiana and so many different experiences, different microclimates, different foods according whether if you're north versus if you're in the southwest Louisiana, you're getting boudin. You go to New Orleans, you get beignets, you get meat pies, and Natchitoches, so
That's so
every
true.
place is different. But the history, and I think you're right, the bed and breakfasts are charming. I mean, it's charming, and yet that small town feel, yet it's still city with modern conveniences on one side, but the historic downtown area, that historic district to me is, there's nowhere like it. So for a book setting, that's why I was excited to talk to you, is like, this is perfect. They keep saying that Hollywood or Hallmark Channel has to do a Christmas movie set there.
Yeah, I've tried to approach them in several different ways to get my story out because I think it would make a very good book. It has a lot of similarities to Steel Magnolias, but
Oh yes, Steel
with
Magnolias being filmed there, and yeah.
but it's generational, so it has a lot of potential, but I can't get my foot in the door. So if you have any
Yeah.
connections, please let me
Well,
know.
I'll just click my fingers right now. I mean, I think, Natchitoches should be on, and they get all these awards for being best small town in the South, and it makes sense because it is so just, we love it. I mean, we travel full time, but I swear it's like, ooh, we might just end up there, because it's just beautiful. But I think there's a lot of powerful women that come from Natchitoches and the history of Natchitoches. What did you find out of for your family for your books? Because you've got women characters going on in there too.
Well, I came from a family of five sisters,
Oh.
and there were three brothers, but my books concentrate more on the sisters because the main character is my pseudo character, my alter ego. And then her four sisters are modeled after my own four sisters. So that's how the series became centered on
Women.
five women. And there's some cousins splashed in there. And my main character's name is Mary, and her best friend is Sarah. So they have, that character in there. Sarah's a very strong personality. Mary's more of a nurturing, motherly type character, but she's always trying to gather all the hens, I mean gather all the chicks, but and also it talks a lot about her mother and her mother's twin sister and a couple other sisters, so it's very generational.
But
Lot
that's
of women
good.
in it.
I think that's good, though. We got to show the general, and women fight, but they also need to get back together when they do.
Yes.
You gotta, yeah, that does that happen? Do you have that? A little.
Well, funny you should mention that because the villain in the first book is a woman, and she's the stepmother, and she's very much not liked by the family. But then in my last book, she gets redeemed. It's called Lily's Redemption, the last book. And it makes her, they make, they have a reason that they all end up back on the same page.
See, but that happens. Yeah, you have to have that.
I don't want
And
to say too
sometimes,
much because I don't want to give it away.
give it away. I know. So are all your books within the series, or do you have any books outside of the series? I know you were talking about the children's book before, but
I
didn't
have
weren't
a
you working on
children's
some?
book that came out years before, and then I have the four book series, Willow Rose series, and then the fifth book is a spinoff of the series. It was supposed to be the fifth book in the series, but because the main character is Lily and not Mary, and because it kind of takes a different direction in that it's based on a near-death experience. So I didn't know if it would really fall in line with being part of the series. I was going to name it Heavenly Roses, and it was going to be part of the series because it was based on near-death experience. But In the end,
Ooh.
I made the decision to make it as a standalone book, as a spinoff.
It makes sense too. I mean, a lot of writers do that, but now do you find your characters, especially being connected to your family, do they talk to you?
Do
I
my
mean, are you
characters
having,
talk to me?
yeah, when you're writing,
Oh,
are you? I mean, are you having
very
like a
much.
family reunion when you're
My
writing?
characters write them their own story. I kind of joke about the fact that I'm really not that talented, that the characters don't that I don't create out of thin air, that I base these characters off of my own family, but then they take on a life of their own. They're not only the first book really centers around a lot of true information. And then as the stories develop, the characters just kind of wrote themselves, into storylines and stuff. It they just I just sit at the computer with an idea in my head. I don't even have an outline. I don't even pan the whole story out in my head. I have like a general idea of what direction I want it to go. And then I sit at the computer and I just start typing, and it just writes itself almost, because the characters speak to me, like you said. They tell me, well, this is what I would do next, or this is, what direction, or this is
I
what.
want to know about the near-death experience. We're fascinated by it because it is fascinating because they say there's that 72-hour period when someone goes and they can come back at that time. And it's very fascinating. And there's doc, I mean, that's a rabbit hole. If I see one thing on YouTube, I'm stuck there all night long and I don't,
Well,
it's fascinating.
I did extensive research into near-death experiences, and when I did that book, read a lot of and watched a lot of video on near-death experience, people who had
It's
been through it.
fascinating.
And I find it to be, yes, very fascinating. And I find it to be very realistic. I think it's, I believe in it, but I know a lot of people don't. And so that's why I was worried about writing about it, because I didn't want people to dismiss the book as, being too far out there,
A
which is
woo-woo.
another reason why I made it a spinoff and not part of the series, because I didn't want people to think that I was going into the
Well,
I
there's
was taking
professors
some.
who do it, who cover this. I mean, this is medical. I mean, a lot of that research, I'm sure you listen to a lot of the videos of doctors and nurses talking about these things that
Yes,
they, and
that's why I
paramedics.
believe it.
And the people that do it, I mean, it sounds like I mean, when we cross over, it sounds pretty warm and loving to me. Sounds fun. I
Yeah,
mean,
it
some
sounds like
people
a
didn't want to come
wonderful
back.
experience.
There are people that didn't want to come back. They're like, oh,
Yes.
they'll find out when they get here. And they're like, no, it's not your time. Go back.
Yeah.
So
Yes.
it's fascinating. But I think I'm glad you write about it and didn't, fear
I
of
was trying.
unpopularity didn't stop you from writing about it. That's good. Good.
Yeah, I was
That's
trying to
good.
find a way to address COVID, because my storyline of the last book had ended in 2019, towards the end of 2019. So to write another book, I felt like I had to cover COVID in some way, and I was trying to figure out a good way to cover COVID, so. I couldn't think of something to do to cover it. And then I thought, well, there were so many people who died during COVID and, things like that.
Ooh.
And so I said, how do I address it and make it something that's not about COVID? That's something that's totally different,
That's good. That's smart.
So then I came up with this near-death experience. And then at the time, my brother had been visiting me, and we had started watching that show, Ghost. I don't know if you ever heard of it, but it's like a real pop show right now that a lot of people like to watch. It's a comedy. It's about, ghosts who don't go to heaven. They just stay where they're at, And but it's really funny. And we had been watching it, and we were just cracking up at some of the stuff that was going on in it. And I had just started writing my story about the near-death experiences. So we kind of played around with some things that had gone on in on this series. We got some ideas from it, and we were saying, "Oh, what if your characters did this, or what if you know?" So it kind of it's humorous in a lot of
Yeah.
ways.
Well, I think that's important. And the what ifs for writers, that's so much fun to like be able
Yeah, my
to
brother
create
was, since he
creative.
was here, he was helping me so
Yeah,
with
but that's
ideas.
fun because that's the thing. In real life, things do happen. Real things happen, but to be able to just what if this happened? Let's take that route. Let's see, like, will that work in a storyline? You know, do
Yeah,
things.
we
It's
just started
fun.
brain, just what do you call that?
Yeah,
Brainstorming.
brainstorm.
Brainstorming different ideas, you know. And my brother would say, "Well, what if you did this?" And I said, "Well, I have to see if I can work it into this already existing storyline, you know." And
Ah,
so,
wow. So now, so you're taking a break, but how do you take a break if don't you have your characters nagging you to write more?
all the time, and it really makes it hard because I have all these stories in my head. Like I said, I have so many different storylines in my head that I could work on.
Yeah.
And but it's the thing is, once you commit to write a book, it's so much commitment. It takes hundreds of hours of sitting at the computer typing it, just the rough draft. Now I can get a rough draft out in a couple of months. It doesn't take me long to write a rough draft. But that's while I'm writing it, I'm having to block out everything else that's going on in my life because it takes over my brain and I can't focus on anything. Then I have to be able to shut everything out because if I don't shut everything out, then I can't write. So it's
We
kind of a double-edged
battle
sword.
with that, as you know, doing podcasting and writing articles. So, like, if I do podcasting, a couple podcasts, and then I'm supposed to write an article, my brain's just
Yeah.
somewhere else. It
Yeah.
doesn't work. And
My
if I'm
I'm just
writing,
like I have to be.
and I want to stay in my pajamas, and that's that.
Yeah.
Don't
And
ask me to, yeah,
so
don't ask me to write without my pajamas on. It's not
yeah,
happening.
I sit. I come home. I mean, I get up in the morning. I used to drink coffee, but I can't drink coffee anymore, so sometimes I get hot chocolate or whatever, but I get by my computer and I may type all day. My husband will be gone for the day. He'll come back and he'll say, "You're still sitting there typing." But I may get up to go to the bathroom or maybe eat something, you know. But other than that, I'm at the computer, and so it's hard to do that. It's hard to just block out everything else in your life, especially I belong to a volunteer club and I belong to the writers group. I have children and you know adult children, grandchildren. I have you know other things going on, so other commitments. So I have to be able to do that. Make that commitment. Then once I do the rough draft and get the storyline, you know, in set, then I have to do all the rewrites, all the, you know, editing. Then I have to submit it to the publisher. You understand how all this works. So it's such a long process. It takes, you know, several months to get all that going
It's
done.
like having a child.
Yeah. Oh, I say that all the time. I say it's like birthing a child. And then when the child's finally born or the book's finally released, then you're so nervous, is anybody going to buy it? You know, because
And
you
then what are they
feel,
going to think?
yeah. And if they're going to like it, if they do buy it, you know, so your publishers put all this money into publishing a book under, you know, the thinking that you're going to be a success, but they don't go out and sell it. So in order for you to keep your publishers happy and to make your time worth it, you have to go out there and push it, you know, and that
See, you're
takes
birthing
time.
again. You're
Yeah, that takes
birthing
time and that takes money. You know, it's not just time, it's money because.
It's all of it because, you know, the it's that's what's so funny, you know, people getting started in writing. And yes, there's the really big ones like Missioner and, you know, people like that. But today's age, you get a publisher, which is not that easy to get. It's
No.
not. A lot of people are self-published. And either way, whether you're self-published or you have a publisher, you have to do the work. You have to do the publishing. People think, oh, I'm going to get a publisher and they're going to cut me a check and I can just keep writing. That's not
No.
how it works. That is not at all how it works.
And my publisher is a small publisher. They're not a big publisher. And while they put up all the money to publish my book, I have to put up all the money
Get out there.
to get out there and get it pub to and do all the work. I have to do all the work, you know. So, and I make very little on royalties on the back end because the publisher gets most of the royalties. And there's not much royalties in books. You know, people think, oh, I'm paying, you know, $15 for a book or whatever. I'm paying, you know, that's a lot to have to put out for a story. But the author does not see much of that $15. You know, I
It's
see a few, you know,
yeah.
few dollars for every book, you know. And most of my money I make off of my first two books, which I self-published. And I had to put up all the money up front to publish those books. And they're not written quite as professionally as my three other books because I didn't know what I was doing when I was self-publishing and I was learning. You know, I
Sure.
didn't even know I was going to put the book out when I wrote it. So, but those are the ones that sell the most because people, you know, are going to buy the first books in the series. They're not going to buy
Sure.
the third book or the fourth book or the fifth book. So this becomes an issue with them because I make the most money on the first two books, but I've got to get people to read the first two books and then go on to the third, fourth, and fifth book. And a lot of people buy the first book or the second, you know, the first two books, and then they don't go online and order the other ones, or they don't, you know, for whatever reason, don't keep reading. Now, I have a lot of diehard fans who have read every book I wrote, and they're like, why aren't you still writing? You know, and, you know, that kind of thing. And I, you know, but you don't, you gotta have, you can't just have, you know, 100 of those. You need 1,000 of those or 2,000 of those, you know?
Well, I think it's important when you talk about the pricing of a book. It's so, when you think about, that's one hamburger in a restaurant. You know, the price of a book is like a hamburger or a lunch that you're going to pay for that comes and goes, and a book can be passed down to somebody else. It's somebody's, you know, that has sweated over it
Or they get them in the
for
library.
right. You can get them library, and then there's the ebooks, and I think online,
Ebooks.
the people love their ebooks, and then you've got audiobooks as the next new thing. Now people really love their audiobooks, and that's a whole
No, and that's a
huge
whole nother
thing.
thing to try to get done.
That's hard. It's hard.
I would love to get an audiobook. Do you know how hard it is to find a narrator that can say
Yeah.
Natchitoches and Ponchatoula and Loyola and you know, all the words you need them to say
You got to
correctly?
get someone from Louisiana. Yep.
Yeah, and they I just haven't, you know, and that's and to find one that won't charge you anything, that'll just take royalties, which is almost, you know, even harder to do, you know. So that's been my
You have to really care about what you're doing to keep doing it, and obviously you do. You have a passion for it and love for it, and you know, sustainable with it. But I'm glad you're being candid about it for people to understand when they get into it that
it's not an easy business.
it's not an easy business. But that doesn't mean don't do it. It means do it, but keep your eyes open and keep working.
Yes, it's got to, you got to be passionate about it. It can be very rewarding, but don't go into it thinking you're going to make big bucks, because you're not, unless you hit it big, you know, and the chances of that, it's like people who, you know, are great singers, but will they make be a well-known singer, you know.
Yeah, it takes time.
It's, you know, you always go out there hoping to find that one person that will make that connection, that maybe they have connections, that will have connections or whatever, and you'll get discovered or whatever, you know. But there are literally millions and millions of books available at the at you know at your fingertips. Get on Amazon. There are so many books. There are sites out there, BookBub, you know, so many different sites out there that give books practically for, you know, free or 99 cents or whatever on digital books. And so your competition is astronomical. You know, you're just a drop in the bucket. So you are trying to get someone to take their money and put it on you as opposed to millions of other people they could put it on. Some of them, bestseller authors. So, and you're just a novice to speak,
Well, yeah, that's what, well, I think, with music, they always say when a musician goes out and does a performance, that's the best rehearsal. You're going to learn your lessons real quick, what people want. You're going to get better because you're live and going for it. I think for writers, it's the same thing. You have to, be able to peddle your wares, basically, but you're going to get better at it quicker because of it, because you want the audience, your readers, to take a chance on you. And if they enjoy it, they're going to come back, get the next book, get the next book. So it makes you become a better writer by having both sides of it. I think if you were just handed a check, you may not improve as much sometimes. You know what I mean? If it's too easy, sometimes you don't. Everyone's different. So
It's
I'm not trying to
going through that
generalize.
struggle.
That's struggle teaches you.
You're refining your skills with fire, my first two books are not written near as, like I said, near as well written as my third, fourth, and fifth book are. I feel like I improved with every book. And then
That's awesome.
when my publisher got a hold of me in the third book, they kind of whipped me into shape, kind of really refined my skills. So my third, fourth, and fifth book are, like I said, the most professional out of the five.
That's awesome.
But
Yeah, that's.
they're starting with the series in the first and the second. So you've got to make them like the story enough that they will continue to read and see
Keep
how
going.
you've improved,
Well, and that's, it's sometimes, though, you prefer the imperfect. That's also the thing. There's stories that are so good and maybe wasn't all polished. And it's the same thing with music. You'll go and hear somebody's album when they were first cutting their teeth, and it wasn't polished, but there was that grit of something needed to come out and be told, the song, the book, and you treasure those. And then all of a sudden, they get better and better and better, more polished. The album producer gets more polished, and then it becomes over polished. And there's a thing that can happen. My mom's an artist, Nancy, and she could paint. She'll go, oh no, a little bit more, a little bit more. And then there's a time when she has to learn to back off from the painting, because if you keep painting, you're over polishing the art. So it's good. Imperfection is a beautiful thing. That's how we learn, that's how we grow. And I think audiences, when they connect in like the story that keeps going with generational times, and those are things that people just want to keep part of that connection. I grew up reading family sagas, like, just you go through generations and generations that would span centuries, and you want to know, and then you'll go back again, and sometimes you'll go, wait, I got to go to the beginning, and you can see the author improve, tighten up, and then you kind of go to the beginning again. You're like, I kind of preferred this older version. It was a little bit more straight to the point or not as polished. So I think there's a beauty in all of it, and that's what the arts are. And I think when a story, I think for people especially who enjoy living in Louisiana and visiting Louisiana, and Natchitoches are going to really, just have that extra connection. It's like I'd read, a story of a place that I love, the people of the place, that of an area that I love. I'm far more prone to buy your books than some place that's fictional that I don't know about. You know what I mean? So Natchitoches, I know it's a tough name, but hey, we all got to learn some other language sometime. So Natchitoches has its own language, as far as I'm concerned. I can't pronounce any of your French things in Louisiana, but I
Well,
can eat.
I try to catch the whole flavor of Natchitoches, being that I had not actually lived in Natchitoches. I'm kind of at a disadvantage in that regard. But I tried to write this. I've lived in several small towns, and I've lived in Louisiana all my life. I've lived in Thibodaux, I've lived in
Oh, cool.
Ruston, I've lived in Monroe, I've lived in Hammond, all these small towns. And so I tried to take my knowledge of all these small towns and what I did know about Natchitoches and what I knew about Louisiana in general. and tried to make it as realistic as I could. You
Yeah.
know, and I've had a lot of people from Natchitoches read the book and say, oh, you know, it's great. I felt so at home in it. And then I've had
Oh,
other
that's awesome.
people from Natchitoches, a few people from Natchitoches say, oh, I didn't feel it was as true to real life as in Natchitoches as it could be. So, you know, you're going to have everybody has their other own
Yeah.
opinions, and you know, you're not going to be everybody's cup of tea, you
Can't
know.
be. Impossible.
But
Yeah.
the people who've not lived in Natchitoches, they don't pick up in those, you know, little intricacies, you know. But I try to make it as realistic as I can. I talk about the streets, you know, she was driving down, you know, the main street. She was driving down Church Street or, you know, whatever. And
All the
I
brick
try.
streets. The women saved the streets there. The women sat down when the Department of Transportation wanted to tar up Front Street. And women sat down, sat on the bricks and said, "You ain't taking our bricks." I think
That
that's
mentioned the
amazing.
bricks, yes.
I love
And
that story.
I talk about, you know, some of the restaurants in town. Maglio's is featured in
Oh,
almost
yeah.
every book. The Landing was featured in almost every book. I was so disappointed when they closed it to regular business, you
Yeah.
know, when I found
Well,
that out.
have you been to you if you've been to Maglio's across the street, they have their bed and breakfast, the Sweet Cane Inn. Have you stayed there?
No, I have not. I have
It's
wanted to.
haunted.
I have
It's
wanted to, but
haunted.
yeah.
It's got, as they said, we stayed there and we kept thinking we heard something go bump in the night, but we wanted that to happen. So you don't know if it did happen or not, but we stayed there the very first time we went in Natchitoches about 10 years ago. Yeah, around about 10 years ago. So the same people own Maglio's as the Sweet Cane Inn, I believe.
And
Yeah.
she has asked me about staying there, and I have not had the opportunity to. I've stayed in the Good House. I've stayed in the Willow Plantation. I've stayed in my family's property was called the Willow Plantation, and they have a plant
Oh.
bed and breakfast called the Willow Bed and Breakfast. But I don't think they're connected specifically, you know, by family member. I've tried to find that out. Nobody seems to know of any connection to my family, but then I've stayed in what's the some of the other ones I've stayed in.
Well, there's the famous Steel Magnolias Bed and Breakfast. That's hard to, I think you have to reserve way ahead.
And they're I don't want to say pricey, but you know, for bed and breakfasts they're not pricey, but you know, you it does add up when I'm traveling and I'm on a tight budget and stuff. I have to pay attention to that too. I've stayed in the Church Street Inn, which is kind of
Oh,
a
yeah.
hotel bed with a bed and breakfast flair to it. And
Oh,
it's
what
I
was
mean
it
it's a
like?
hotel, but it's like a boutique hotel. You know, it's all, and all the furniture is the antique furniture and things like that in it.
Oh,
So it
nice.
has kind of a bed and breakfast feel to it with the concierge service, you know.
Oh, that's
But
nice. I remember when they came, they opened. I remember that being on the horizon. So they're still pretty new, I think.
yeah,
Maybe five,
and
six
they're
years.
very nice. I've stayed there about two or three different times. I really like it there, but I need to venture out and go to more other B&Bs, specifically the one you mentioned, that's owned by the Maglio's,
Yeah.
and some of the others. I visited some of them just going walking through them, but you know, not actually staying in them.
Yeah, I've. Oh, you know what? I did go to the Church Street. We went in there during the Christmas season. We were photographing all the Christmas lights and everything. And isn't that magical, that celebration, the Christmas?
Oh yes, I think everybody in Louisiana, or even anywhere, but specifically if you live in Louisiana, you should make a trip there at least once in your lifetime.
It was epic. We went there opening night. I think that's when we met you on the, Thanksgiving
Yes, that's
weekend.
when I was there.
And then we went again when they did the drone lights, and that was absolutely amazing. It brought tears to your eyes seeing that. I
Yes,
mean, it
it.
just really was incredible. But Natchitoches is a special place. It's home to part of the Cane River Creole National Historical Park is there, the Cane River National Heritage Area It's part of that. I mean, there's the scenic byways, there's all the historic, I mean, there's just so much history. That's what I love
Yes.
about it, and the natural beauty and the Kisatchee Forest. And now is a good time of year to go too, because it's getting to azalea time.
Oh, really? I hadn't known about
Yeah,
that
and
time of year.
spring is the azaleas, and then they have all the festivals start up, the spring festivals, because Natchitoches likes to have a party. They
Yes.
celebrate. They
It's
celebrate.
a there it's a tourist town for sure. It goes from one tourist season to the next, you know.
I know, I know. I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Anne Marie. It's been a pleasure having you here on Big Blend Radio, and we'll
Yes,
hopefully
I
see you
appreciate being
again.
invited. And
Yeah.
I would say if any of your listeners are hearing this and they're good narrators and want to, help me with the audio version of my book, I would be, more than happy to talk to them.
She wants an audiobook. I do know some people. So
And
you never know. You never know. And I
yes,
want
yes.
people to know that your Willow Rose series, you can get that on Amazon and also go through Facebook to connect. So if you want to connect with Anne Marie Jameson, just go to author Anne Marie Jameson. So Anne is with no E, so it's A-N-N. Anne Marie Jameson is on Facebook. And I'll have the link in the show notes too. And she's
Okay, I
also
appreciate
on
that.
Amazon.com. Just type in Anne Marie Jameson. Again, it's the Willow Rose series, and you can find all her books there and keep up with her directly on Facebook. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, and good. I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Big Blend Radio's Toast to the Art Show. Please keep up with us at bigblendradio.com and keep up with Big Blend magazines at blendradioandtv.com.